We're going to end this hour with someone who had quite a year. 28-year-old Eleanor Catton won the 2013 Man Booker Prize with her over 800-page novel about a murder mystery and a love story during the gold rush in New Zealand in the mid-1800s. It's a novel about luck and fate, and it is structured intricately, like a cathedral almost. Each of 12 characters represent the signs of the zodiac, and the luminaries, that's the title of the book, represent the wandering planets. It is very precisely structured, as it is also a tour de force, a great read, according to reviewers. Catton herself is a New Zealander by a certain kind of luck. One parent ran away there to escape the Vietnam War draft. The other side of the family chose New Zealand to escape their fear of a nuclear attack during the Cold War. But the daughter of a philosopher and a librarian was perhaps fated to write a novel of ideas with a vast library of characters. In this conversation, what a year, Eleanor Catton, who has been humbled and a little terrified by her early success, says she is looking forward to moving into a bigger house finally, and to getting her own writing room.
That is on the cards for next year. Yeah, at the moment, I don't have my own study. I've never had my own study at home, as I've only got a two-bedroom apartment, and my partner gets the study while he's legitimately studying for his PhD.
Not because he's a poet, because he's studying for his PhD, he gets the study. The fact that you're a novelist doesn't rank.
We just work that out in our own relationship in our own way, and I was quite alarmed, actually. There came out this, you know, all of this very angry ranting online about gender politics and my relationship and how, you know, my partner was oppressing me by...
Capitulated, yes.
Right.
Right. Well, permit me to say personally how intimidating it is to talk to someone who wrote an 850-word second novel that won the Man Booker Prize without her own study. Okay. But I think that you've been psychoanalyzed quite enough, I suspect. But for me, the biographical detail that fascinates me the most is that you have a set of parents, one philosopher, one librarian. Mm-hmm. And so this book is in many ways a fusion of structure and ideas that seems to me there's the librarian, there's the philosophy. And you've managed to combine, I think, a structure here with a set of ideas that – I think is unusual in this era of novels about, you know, what I'm feeling and what my, you know, inner psychology is all about. There's something very disciplined about all of this.
Right. The approach that I took in writing the book, I suppose, when I started researching the years of the New Zealand Gold Rush, this is kind of the, I guess, the early 1860s through to about the late 1880s, the years that I was looking at in the very early stages of the book. I became very fascinated in the contemporary ideas at that time of what a so-called self-made man really constitutes. Mm-hmm. The 19th century as a whole was a century that saw just such an incredible shift from a kind of a, like really broadly, from a collective way of understanding the self through to a very strongly individual way of understanding the self. And a gold rush is such a mythical kind of primal or archetypal set piece in my mind, or in my kind of cultural imagination anyway, because it's an arena that somebody walks into in order to quote-unquote make their fortune. But really what they're doing is they're just walking into a natural environment and plucking a mineral out of the ground. And that to me fused the ideas of fate on the one hand and individual enterprise on the other really beautifully. And straight away I started following the double meaning of the word fortune, which means obviously both a great deal of money on the one hand, but also your kind of cosmically determined fate.
Well, there's all kinds of tension between this idea of determination and fate and this idea of luck and good fortune. Let me read you a quote. I mean, there are a lot of quotes I could have chosen here, but again, this one really seems to sort of sum it up. "I have been declared the luckiest man in Hokitika," he said as he handed Crosby Wells his envelope. "I have been advised to keep hold of my luck and to share my luck around and to confess the secret of my luck, and I don't know what else. I fancy that the story you told me was not at all true. Mr. Wells, you simply knew what would happen to a man foolish enough to walk into the Reserve Bank with a nugget of that size at this hour of the day." It seems to me that is the perfect sort of collision of the predestiny of astrology and this idea of throwing the dice.
That's interesting. Yeah, the character who is talking there is one of the two, in my mind, most central characters in the book. The book's title refers, as an astrological term, the luminaries. It refers to the sun and the moon, which in astrology act in partnership. And it was actually one of the first ideas in astrology that really kind of spurred my interest in it as a field of study. The sun and the moon kind of very briefly govern our external and internal selves. The sun is kind of our flourishing self that we project out into the world, and the moon is our inner self that we hide from the world. And because in the book these are literalized into actual people, that they're dance around one another in their, you know, love affair and interactions with one another had to in some way reflect that externality and internality when I was kind of designing the book's architecture.
Well, I mean, based on this book and, you know, based on philosophy, there are really only three options. And I gather you're going to have no response to the three I will present. Either you are a genius, or you are incredibly lucky, or the stars have aligned and it allowed you to pursue this structure and allow it to succeed.
What about hard work, though? I'm sure that that's a fourth option.
You cheated.
I guess that was a cheat, yeah. Uh-huh.
So what do you think is the key pitfall of this amazing year for you as a creative artist?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, ever since the Booker Prize, I have been quite alarmed at the degree of visibility that I now kind of have as a creative person. I feel very uncomfortable with that, actually, in most respects. I really like talking about writing and reading and the books I love and, you know, and hearing other writers talk and that kind of thing. But being a public figure is something else entirely. And I've kind of had my first taste of what it feels like to have people want to spin a story out of things that you say, you know. And in fact, how incredibly easy it is to spin a story out of absolutely anything that somebody says.
Mm. I'm kind of. Well, you are a novelist, right?
Yeah, I'm something similar there. But
what can I get her to say about sheep in New Zealand? Yes.
Well, I think there's about six sheep to every one human, but that's about that's the only fact I know about sheep.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've had a great year. What are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to going home, actually. I haven't been back to New Zealand since early October, so I've just been on the road for a really long time, and nothing quite feels real yet. You know, going back home and settling into my life back there and kind of taking stock is going to be wonderful.
First question when you get home, how's that PhD coming, dear?
Oh, yes.
Yes, you'll need his help moving, right?
Yeah, he's had a... Yeah, a lot of changes in his year, too, so got a lot of taking stock to do.
Eleanor Catton, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
And congratulations on a great year. Have a great 2014.
Cheers, will do.
At the end of the hour, we bounce back to the middle. People who have a median income in their own community, where do you land? Are you slipping or climbing?
My name's Wayne. I'm from Clearwater, Florida. I am stuck right in the middle, and I can't seem to go up, and I retire in 5 years. Am I going to be able to retire?
Tell us your situation at 877-8-MY-TAKE or send us a tweet at The Takeaway. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.